If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Well, hello, hello. We're on the Thames today and surrounded peculiarly by seagulls on one side of us on the North Greenwich Peninsula, and on the other side I've seen what I believe are the SAS going past in a couple of attack boats. So add that up howsoever you see fit. Hopefully we're not going to come unstuck. There's more SAS. These are the same guys who were practicing down by the Olympics to make sure everything was secure. Well, the waves are causing the Thames Clipper, upon which you find me to bob up and down, rock from side to side, and generally require me to have my sea legs. I'm waiting for the CEO of the Thames Clippers company to join me for a voyage on the Thames.
Hey baby, let me take you down to a place of strange sights and sounds you ain't never seen the like before. Just a stone's throw from your front door. Hey baby, stood out to me. See things of the air, land and the sea. Some creep, some saw. Down the road, jam brand store.
My heart aches for some far off place. No one could have fed you with your name, how you raised us.
Well, the ropes have been let go, and as you can hear in the background, the Clipper is now in from the North Greenwich Peninsula. And with me, Sean Collins, the CEO of Thames Clippers. Hi, Sean.
Good afternoon to you.
Hi. We've just about made it there. I gather you're a busy man. What occupies most of your time?
Meetings, internally and externally. So we have a lot of management meetings internally. Deciding strategies and everything else for the business moving forward. Today's problems, tomorrow's problems, and everything else like that. So and as I say, then a lot of external meetings from a commercial perspective.
Now, I know that you started this company back in 15 years ago.
Yes.
And what was the shape of the company in its early days?
It was just me and my partner back then, Alan Woods, who both of us come from a long line of river family, and it was sort of brought about through the demise of the original Thames Line river bus service that was started back in the 1980s.
Oh, I've not heard about this.
There's been many failures of this type of operation throughout the years, dating back to the late 18th century with the penny steamers, and you know, there has always been a need for it, but there's certain factors that have always stood in its path. Fortunately, we got it right back in 1999 when we started with one boat, proved it can work, grew it slowly, and the rest is history, as they say.
We've been doing quite a few episodes recently that have featured London Bridge, and of course when you think of London Bridge through the ages, you think of the ferrymen weaving in and out, and a very skilled profession, but also an absolutely necessary function for London. Why is it that over the ensuing years these projects have been tried and haven't done so well?
Well, I wouldn't say it's never worked, because when you look back at the days of the London waterman, it was the London taxi driver. That was how everybody travelled, albeit by Royal Barge or Barge. company barge. A lot of the companies had barges.
When are we talking when you think of that?
Oh, back in the late 17th century.
As we move along, listener, you are going to hear lots of electronic chirps and bleeps and so forth in the background. The reason for that is, of course, river navigation is a complex procedure. Lots of GPS tracking and radio work going on. And we're sitting, I believe, just behind the cabin here where a lot of that equipment is stored. So if the sound quality isn't all it could be, then that is why we're sitting in a bundle of electronics. But I interrupted you, Sean. You were talking about the 17th century and the use of the river there.
Yes, the operation of watermen carrying people around on the Thames dates back to the 17th century, and in fact there is still a rowing race, which is the oldest contested sporting event in the world, called the Doggett's Coat and Badge, and that's contested every year between London Bridge and Chelsea. And it was founded by Thomas Doggett, who's a late comedian, who used to perform on the North Bank in the Mermaid Theatre, and he used to call upon the services of a waterman every day to transit the river. And he recognised the skill and expertise that went into the apprenticeship of this skill trade, and as a result of that, he created this race, and that race was raced from 1715 to this day.
And has more supporters involved in it than contestants usually.
Yeah, very much so.
Normally you see a barge full of people in their Sunday best following alongside. We've got the announcements going off letting us know where we are, but perhaps we could give a little bit of a commentary as we go. We set out from outside the O2, and I know there are business connections there as well, which perhaps we can develop as we go along. But the architecture that we're passing now is rather grander and slightly less modern. Where are we now?
We are at Greenwich now. Royal Borough of Greenwich, and we've just passed the Royal Naval College, and behind that is the National Maritime Museum. You know, Greenwich is really becoming a destination in its own right now. It's a fantastic place to visit, fantastic place to live, and it's, as you can see by the numbers that are just about to get on the boat here in midweek in March, is pretty significant as to how much the river is becoming a transport hub for Greenwich, getting, you know, visitors that are coming to London, domestic use as well, visiting the various attractions here. We've currently got the Turner exhibition going on in the Royal Naval College that has been very, very heavily supported. It's really a great exhibition and has had a great turnout.
How do you see, because of course in relatively recent years Greenwich has been opened up a little bit by some of the underground lines and so forth allowing people to access it, do you see that as competition for Thames Clippers, or is that complementary or beneficial indeed to you?
I see it as complementary. At the end of the day, the more option people have and the more efficient it is for them to move between the two, the greater the benefit. You know, it was very much proved during the Olympic Games, where, you know, you've got overground, you had the DLR and you had the Jubilee line at the peninsula, both from the peninsula and here from Greenwich, and it was heavily utilised, the whole transport network heavily utilised, big public transport usage, and the river fared very, very well in that.
Now, that's interesting, because when I've been happening to glance over the side of a bridge and spotted one of the clippers, and we'll give a description of them as well, because people will be seeing them, and if they're not used to using them, or if perhaps they don't know what they are, they might not recognise them as clippers, as something available to them. They might seem like private party boats or something. I don't know. How would we recognise a Thames Clipper?
They're a very low, sleek-looking vessel, with lots of windows so the customers can see out, and whilst they're transporting by boat, I've got the ability to see the fantastic sights and our iconic city, and they're normally going pretty fast.
Yes, and are they catamarans, am I right?
That's correct, yeah, they're catamaran vessels, and as a result of a lot of testing of the whole design, they can still maintain the speeds going against the tide as going with the tide. They very much cut through the water, which, you know, when we spoke earlier on about some of the failures in the past, the tide has been a barrier in that regard, and it hasn't allowed the vessel to go as fast in one direction as it is in the other as a result of the tides. But, you know, due to technology and advanced designs, That isn't a problem with these vessels.
And I know you've got 13 of them operating on the river at the moment. I'm wondering, going back to that those early doors for you on the river, the obvious thing is if you're going to set up a service on the river, you'd kind of want to go in with all guns blazing and half a dozen boats already. How did you gradually build that up, and how did you, at the beginning, envisage that growth?
Well, one of the one of the issues with previous attempts, there was a massive capital outlay, and that wasn't able to be supported in the slow migration of people using the river. So there was a commercial issue there. So we grow the business one boat at a time, almost adding a boat every year. As you just said, we've got 13 boats now and we've been operating 15 years. So we've almost added a boat a year, and we're currently looking at expanding the fleet over the next couple of years as well. So it has been a very slow progression in order to ensure that the business remains viable.
I'm sure that must have changed your customer profile as well somewhat then, because presumably if you start off with one boat, people are going to know when that boat is going to be, and that's going to be perhaps less attractive to a sort of a commuting public, whereas now with the greater frequency of service, you're really reaching out to the commuting audience.
You'll be very surprised, actually. Because of the fantastic environment that you've got of travelling by boat, you've got the comfort, you've got the luxury of having a seat, you've got the space.
Yes, we should just pause on that. Where else can you commute and get a seat? I mean, is that the case at rush hour as well?
Absolutely. We have to have a seat for every passenger that is carried.
You're legally required to get a seat on this service?
Legally required to get a seat, be in the seat, and have your life jacket underneath the seat. So it is, yeah, absolutely. And that is very unique in any busy capital of the world, not just London. And I think that is our USP. And actually, from day one, people was queuing up to buy a season ticket to travel on that one boat. We only done three stops between Surrey Quays and the West End. Two intermediate stops, one at Canary Wharf and one at London Bridge. So once again, we started the route in a manner to be able to deliver. It was purely commuting. We only operated 3.5-4 hours in the morning, and the same in the evening, Monday to Friday, so that we could use the downtime over the weekend to maintain the vessel and preventative maintenance in order to ensure that it was ready to operate the next day. And at the time as well, I was, you know, not just running the business, I was actually driving that boat and captaining that boat and recognising the areas, what we needed to change, what we needed to grow and do in order to move on to the next stage. And I think that was one of the benefits that the business experienced.
It seems to me as though some of the places you've mentioned there, you wouldn't necessarily associate with commuters living there. They seem more like the sort of places you would go to if you're commuting. How do you sort of funnel people in from wherever it is they're based and get them to work?
Well, albeit only 8 months, but we actually started our service from Surrey Quays in 1999, and there was a massive residential catchment there that was totally unserved by an underground and very poor bus links at the time,
and allegedly by cab drivers as well.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there was a very good minicab business around that area in those days as well, and the Jubilee line was 8 months away from when we started the operation. But I always see that there was such a dense population within that area, and equally around Canary Wharf Riverside, that there would always be a demand for people wanting to get from there to the city and the West End. And we are the quickest form of transport, for example, from Greenland to Blackfriars.
From Greenland?
Yeah, Greenland Pier, Surrey Quays, sorry.
Oh, so we've come further than I thought. we've come to a pause here. It looks like we're docking. Ah, this is Surrey Quays.
It is, yeah, this is Surrey Quays.
For someone unfamiliar with the profile of Surrey Quays, and we do have one or two listeners who aren't based in London, how would you depict this area?
It's a fantastic area. It's known as Greenland Dock because it was the Surrey Commercial Docks where a lot of trade took place in the heyday of the London dock system, and it was one of the first dock areas to be redeveloped. So, you know, the whole of the dock side now is populated by townhouses, flats, apartments, and that is the case throughout the whole of the peninsula. That still has the locked-in waterways within it that has been turned into residential moorings and marinas. Behind this pier here is a fantastic marina.
Oh, right. So Surrey Quays is still on the Greenwich Peninsula?
No, it's on the Rotherhithe Peninsula.
Ah, right. Okay. Yes. It's one of those areas where because the river twists and turns so many times, it's very easy to lose track of exactly where you are.
Absolutely. As the crow flies, in a minute, we're only going to be as the crow flies at the same speed of what we were travelling from the North Greenwich Peninsula to Canary Wharf. Is a few minutes, as opposed to we've come all the way round the Isle of Docks, which, as you know, has just taken us 18 minutes.
Just looking around at the people we're sharing with, I should say we're on a sort of a 3:15 sailing at the moment, and obviously wrong time of day for commuters, but it looks like you've picked up a healthy size of crowd here. I'm guessing that a few of these might be tourists. Does that form quite a large proportion of your trade?
Absolutely, yep. A lot of visitors, obviously, as I said, to enter Greenwich on a daily basis, and they would have come from the Cutty Sark, the National Maritime Museum, and what have you in Greenwich. But equally, we've just picked up a few at Greenland Pier now, and you know that's people going to pick children up from school, because actually there's quite a few nurseries and that in Canary Wharf. So you know that's a regular trip.
Well, that's straight away opens up possibilities that I wouldn't have thought of, and of course that's going to be exactly what you want to do, is normalise the use of this, and it's clearly a great way to get around. What are the sort of mental barriers perhaps that people have about getting on a boat and using it as their main means of getting around London, and how would you overcome those blocks?
Well, this perception that it's expensive, which if you're a regular user, it's not, and equally it's very hard to link it up to all the other forms of transport. So the intermodal point, there's this mind block that it doesn't do that, but it does.
Let's get some figures attached to both of those, shall we? What's the cost of getting on a boat?
The cost of using the boat on a daily basis could be £2 a journey. If you're a season ticket holder using it 5 days a week to return to and fro work.
Well, that compares very favourably, really, doesn't it, with your average commuting trip?
Absolutely. That is with a discount if you've got a travel card, but then if you're using other forms of transport, most people have. So, absolutely, it is comparable to other forms of transport.
And you mentioned it's public transport. Can you use an Oyster card on the Clippers?
Yes, you can. You can use an Oyster card as payment. It is still full fare less 10%. So that has got less of a discount than what the travel card has got. And at the moment, it's not a touch-in, touch-out system, but hopefully that's going to be coming online in 2015 as well. So I'd say one of the areas that we have still yet to really get right and develop is the ticketing system. And indeed, it being more like and more in line with the rest of the London transport system. And we're working very, very hard with Transport for London in developing that, so that the customer does link it up, even through ticketing.
We'll talk as well about that issue of intermodality that we touched on there, but we've come to a pause, and we're at Canary Wharf. What can we say about Canary Wharf?
Well, apart from it being fantastic, a great place to work.
You're going to say that about every stop, aren't
you? No, Canary Wharf is quite special, I believe. It's a location that is a lot closer to the city than people think. The way it's been developed is a very easy, simple place to get around, and got some great public rail, just generally a good place to work. You know, it's like the city in the east.
It always seems a little bit like the Emerald City to me. It's always there on the horizon somewhere, twinkling away, but I'm never quite sure what I should go there for.
You can go there for all sorts of things: shopping, work, ice skating. It all depends what time of year.
Ice skating?
Absolutely. There's a great ice skating rink there most of the winter. And in the summer, there's all sorts of concerts and things like that that take place in Cupot Square.
Well, I think I'm sold.
and indeed, as I say, shopping. And you know, coming back to the cost of a trip, a lot of our commuters that live in the developments, to the riparian, to our peers that we've just meandered through, use the boat to get to and from Canary Wharf for a weekend to get their shopping and things like that. So, you know, that season ticket is not just Monday to Friday, it is used weekends, it is used of an evening. There's nothing to stop someone that's got a season ticket and getting on at Surrey Quays or from Canary Wharf and going to the O2 to watch an event.
What does a season ticket set you back?
Just over 1,000 a year.
Intermodality, which is not a word that trips off the tongue ordinarily, but just thinking about North Greenwich there was quite a trip. It felt like a sort of a 4 or 5 minute walk from the tube station to get to North Greenwich Pier, which on a beautiful day like this is no sweat at all. Does that present any of your problems though? Of course, a lot of other transport hubs are in the same building to whatever degree.
Yeah, that does cause a problem if you're transferring from one mode to the other. Predominantly, we don't get that at North Greenwich. The people that's visiting North Greenwich either choose one location or one transport or the other. So they'll come out of the O2 arena and they will either choose the underground or they will choose the boat, in which case your walk to the pier is nearer than the platform. But once again, it doesn't feel like that. It's all about perception. But there is a covered walkway all the way from the O2 arena to the pier.
That's true, there is.
Yeah. There you go.
I didn't notice it because the weather's too good. What about Transport for London? How does that relationship work? Clearly, you're keen to work together, but also, and are working together, over the course of the 15 years, how has that changed and developed?
Well, Transport for London have never really had any, originally never had any vision for river services.
That's astonishing in itself, isn't it?
Well, it isn't when you look at the river is never going to be a mass transit. And when you look at the upgrade that that's needed to happen on the underground and the development of the bus routes and what have you, I guess their focus has been on those elements and getting that all up to a modern position. In the last few years, there has been a tremendous shift in that, and there is a lot of focus on that now. It's been led by the Mayor. The Mayor has a river action plan now that sees a vision of doubling passenger numbers in the next 5 years on the river.
From what to what?
From 6 million to 12 million. And already in 2013, in 2013, that number is nearer 8 million. So in 1 year, there has been a tremendous growth in passenger numbers on the river. It throughout all aspects, not just river bus, although river bus is the biggest growth, but tourism is added to that as well. And once again, I think that is as a result of the Olympics and the legacy of the Olympics, where river played a big part in getting people to and fro for the river's own venues.
So I suppose I'm a bit confused then. It might be just terminology, but when you say it's not suitable for mass transit, it's not an option for that. What do you mean?
It's never going to carry the same numbers of the Jubilee line, but it will carry more than a busy bus route if it is allowed to grow and the infrastructure is developed.
That must mean that you've got a bit of an idea of what the capacity could be. There must be a sort of a limit beyond which it's sort of a bit foolish to try and push it.
I think the river could achieve 15 million passengers a year just on river bus alone. It's a long way off, but it could achieve that.
What then are the factors that produce that sort of limit?
Just purely navigational space, pier capacity, the barriers that the river presents with the different tides, the bridges and everything else that would just limit the amount of boats that could operate in central London at any one time.
Well, that's interesting, Rose. So we've got lots of little bottlenecks all along the river, essentially, with the bridges.
Yeah, but the nice thing is that at the moment, unlike bottlenecks on rail or on road, they don't cause too big a problem. You know, we don't get any significant delays as a result of that. We get delays, but we don't get any significant delays. You know, it's pretty reliable. Only speaking to one of our customers the other day, that's a corporate customer. We take school children from Westminster to Putney for their rowing lessons. And he was the rowing master, Dave Riches, was saying that that it's great that they can rely on the journey time of getting the children from the school to the boathouse, whereas before doing it by road they couldn't.
I still feel they should be getting there under their own steam.
But it all depends how much. If you want to get them out on the water for a longer period of time, you've got to make sure they get there on time.
So they're not going to row there themselves. Fair enough. We'll take a short pause. I think, I'm not sure if we're coming.
We're just approaching Tower Bridge now.
Right, okay. Well, do you know what? So much has been said about Tower Bridge. I think this is a good moment to take a word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back with Sean Collins on the Thames Clipper.
Londonist Out Loud is sponsored by Audible. To claim your free audiobook from a range of 60,000 titles, try the Audible service on 30-day free trial. Audiobooks can be saved as MP3s and played on your compatible phone, tablet, or desktop, or burned to CD, and they're yours to keep. For your free audiobook, go to www.audible.co.uk/Londonist and click through.
Well, when we were out with some of the rubbish barges on Londonist Out Loud, one of the things that I couldn't help noticing was just what a different view you get of the city as you move through it along the river. And quite a large portion of London, I think, is made to be seen from the river. It's a perspective that you really can't get any other way. And particularly some of these beautiful wharf buildings, some of which we're passing now, Butler's Wharf off to my left, and this fantastic and imposing industrial architecture as we move. Oh, we're just coming under Tower Bridge now. This is a real treat. What's it like on a choppy day?
This is pretty choppy now, so you know you're not really feeling it on here. You know, the design of the vessels being catamarans sort of keep them pretty firm in the water, and from a customer experience you don't really notice it too much. Doesn't really affect us too much. Wind, rain, snow. We once again it's a service that doesn't really get affected too much by weather conditions. The only thing that does affect us is fog, and even then we operate at a lower speed until it gets too dense. We've got a cut-off period of which we have to stop operation completely, and unfortunately that often happens down towards the barrier and the Woolwich section of our route because of the amount of water around there. You often hear City Airport being hampered by the same thing, so it's something that's quite common to that area. It gets very dense.
I'm tempted to throw a challenge down to you here. We've done a few episodes where we've touched on the history of the Tower of London. Do you reckon that you would be able to come up with a fact about the Tower of London that we wouldn't already know?
I very much doubt it. I might be able to come up with something, but I'm not sure whether it would be the truth or not.
That's a good strategy.
There's a lot of wisetails out there.
I can think of a certain tour guide on the South Bank I know who would very much approve of that approach to history. Off to our left at the moment, we can see City Hall there. There's new building going on. What's going on there? Do we know what's on the left of City Hall? What are they constructing?
We do, yeah. That's a big residential development that's taking place. It's one of the Berkeley Group buildings. It's a very, very big residential, which is sort of just completing the riverscape from London Bridge down to Tower Bridge, because you've got the fantastic buildings here of Lookmore London just to either side of the Mayor's building. That development is just going to sort of finish off the picture over there. And when you look back only 20 years as to the derelict wharves and everything that used to be over there, it's amazing the transition in such a relatively short period of time.
Yes, it's always felt like a bit of a black hole just there, hasn't it?
Absolutely, and it's going to be one of the final pieces to the jigsaw over there. What with that and the development of London Bridge Station, where there's going to be a transition of retail there and urban realm, it really is going to be, you know, another piece of the city, this great city.
You sound like somebody who embraces modernity and progress in a big way. I know a lot of the people that we have on the show are historians and so naturally find themselves looking back. Do you have an interest in that direction?
I don't, absolutely not, but I guess it's because of my love for the river, and the river being, you know, the archery to London. And I've been very fortunate to be of an era that has come through that massive transition. I can remember as a young boy a lot of the derelict wharves along the river that, you know, had nothing but a pigeon living in them. And you know, that transition from then to now and the continued development, you know, the excitement of Battersea Power Station being developed now and that whole Nine Elms corridor. When you look at the development that is going on between the Thames Barrier all the way up to Putney, it's pretty exciting. And what it's doing is bringing the river alive, because what better way to look at all of those buildings and all of that architecture than from the river? And if you can do that and commute to and from work, you're pretty lucky, I reckon.
Well, let's step away from the Clippers for a second, because I'm interested to know what else you've got your eye on that's happening not on the banks of the river, but on the river itself. Are there other projects that you're spotting going on, other events that help to push things forward?
Ever since the age of 11, I've rowed. I used to do a lot of rowing in my teens and up until about 28, when I decided to concentrate more on business and sort of started Thames Clippers. But for me, rowing is a fantastic sport. It's the one that we win the most medals at the Olympics in. And the progression and the development of rowing in the upper reaches and in Greenwich and the docks is phenomenal, and there's more and more people that are getting involved in the sport that would never have considered it 15, 20 years ago.
I often hear horror stories about the sort of things that you can pick up from the... and notwithstanding the efforts made to make the Thames healthier, that are by and large successful as far as I understand, you know, we start to see fish and things like that. But all the same, the river isn't the healthiest of substances, and I gather that a number of rows go down with all sorts of odd ailments.
Not that often, if I'm totally honest. You know, it's like everything, you'll always hear it a one. It's not as clean as it could be. But it certainly doesn't, you know, doesn't make it dangerous. You know, I believe that the Thames Tideway Tunnel that is looking for planning permission at the moment, seeking planning permission to commence being built in 2016, is going to, you know, tick that box as well, and remove a lot of the debris that you see floating up and down. Having said that, it's a very fast flowing river. And there isn't a river in the world that doesn't suffer from flooding, doesn't suffer from large tides, rainfall, that naturally will then, you know, act as a drain and wash all those debris down at some stage. So
you've been very delicate in the way you've presented that. And I think rightly so, people might be eating.
Well, you know, a similar operation to this in Brisbane, you may recall, in Australia, you may recall they had some horrific floods there 2 years ago. And the whole service was brought to its knees as a result of it, just because the height for the waters dislodged all the piers. The boats were still there and ready to operate, but it caused significant damage to the piers. Once again, you know, we've got to give a lot of credit to the foresight of London in the decision to build the Thames Barrier, because if that barrier wasn't here, we would have had a significant flooding in the last 2 or 3 months, with high tides coming in from the sea and heavy floodwaters coming down from the upper reaches. They would have met each other, and you know, London would have experienced flooding.
Yes, that's always one of the things I find it hardest to get my head around, but also it brings the river to life in a way that just looking at it doesn't. Is that understanding of how different parts of the river can be doing entirely different things from each other at the same time?
Absolutely, and there you are with two elements meeting each other. The rain pushing the land water out towards the sea, and the sea coming in, pushing the land water back. It's a very, very simple system that causes major, major problems.
Well, the shadows overhead tell us we're passing under a bridge. Where are we now?
We're just passed through Canner Street Railway Bridge, and now just approaching Southwark Bridge, where we'll be docking into Bankside Pier, where you have the Globe Theatre and the Tate Modern.
And I think we missed it. We were waffling, and I think we missed a stop back there.
Yeah, an important one. London Bridge City, very important stop for London Bridge Station. That is a very close intermodal transport connection between river and rail out to the southeast, and a lot of people use that to get to Canary Wharf in the morning. So you come in by main line, off onto the pier, onto the boat, and 9 minutes later you're in Canary Wharf.
So presumably, it's a foolish question, but you've got boats going in both directions. Well, do you know what? As I asked it, what should pass us? And what about London Bridge? You mentioned the development there, and we've got to talk about North Greenwich Peninsula as well before the end of the conversation. But what are the plans, as far as you understand them, at London Bridge?
Well, the whole station is being redeveloped, eventually to cope with trains more efficiently, more effectively, but furthermore, you know, make it a better experience. All of the underside of the arches underneath the bridge, which is on a sort of a viaduct, is going to be turned into retail and commercial units, which will obviously facilitate the vastly growing residential and commercial property development within the area.
Well, maybe it is a good time to talk about North Greenwich, because one of the things that strikes me, as opposed to London Bridge, which is already, as you say, a thriving, busy area, lots of people living in and around, lots of good connections going south and so forth. North Greenwich Peninsula, I mean, people from, I should say probably Greenwich, they quite like being a little bit cut off in some respects, I think. I think a lot of the people I've spoken to in Greenwich see themselves as a little bit apart in some respect, like their privacy to whatever degree. But there's big things going on there, of course, the O2, I don't know whether we talk about the cable car or not, but apart from that, there's a lot of nothing going on North Greenwich Peninsula, a lot of scope for things to be developed. With your eye to the future, I'm sure you must have ideas about what you'd like to see happening there.
Yeah, I mean, it was only 7 years ago that we started, 8 years ago actually, that we started operating out of North Greenwich Pier, and that was a result of the revitalising of the dome into the O2 by AEG. And, you know, from that day, really, the peninsula has started to grow, started to develop and become a destination. And it is a destination now. And I don't believe it's isolated either. It's got a cable car, it's got a boat service, it's got a massive bus terminal, and it's got the Jubilee line. So it's got pretty much every mode of transport.
Well, if we're going to go for the cable car thing, I mean, really?
It's great. It is absolutely fantastic. And whilst it's not carrying the numbers that one would have expected it to, it is carrying the numbers that they forecast it to. And as the Royal Docks develop, which is going to happen, you know, massive redevelopment and development plans released only this week in the Evening Standard that indicate that, you know, the place is going to be regenerated, and that will require transport links. And, you know, mark my words, whilst it's not probably working today as much in the way of transport as it will in the future, it's still busy. And, you know, we link up with it. We take people from central London down to North Greenwich Pier that then use the cable car to get over to the XL Centre when they're going to see exhibitions that's taking part at XL. You know, it's a very busy venue. The boat show this year, you know, we transported a significant amount of people down to the XL via the cable car.
Now, the XL's the factor that we didn't think about. We went up there, Rachel Holdsworth from London Est and I went over on the cable car and tried to spot what was on the other side. And apart from there's some sort of a renewables thing run by Siemens, I forget what the thing was called, and a closed fish and chip stall. And apart from that, we couldn't really spot why anyone would go to that particular spot.
You've got a lot of hotels over there as well, obviously, to support XL, because, you know, when it's busy, it's extremely busy. And so over weekend, a lot of people stay in those hotels when there's no events on, and they need to get to central London and go out and do stuff. And so it's quite busy.
I almost feel persuaded. I don't know if I'm the whole way there yet. We should give a little bit of description as to where we are, by the way.
We're coming up to the end of the line. Our next stop is at Embankment, which is our last stop on the RB1 route on the North Shore. We then transit over to the London Eye, where the vessel then starts to return back east.
We're past it. Is that the President on our right?
HMS President, yep. And shortly coming up in front of that is the HMS Wellington.
Now, we've seemed to have whizzed along this bit of river. What sort of speed are we doing?
We're actually, this is our slowest part of the route.
Is it really?
But it's just not very long.
Well, now, in my mind, and I think I'm thinking District Line, this seems to take forever, this bit.
Probably, yeah, with the District Line, but it doesn't by boat. In fact, you know, you're only talking about just over a mile between Embankment and Tower. So it's not a big distance. That said, we've got three stops in between Tower and Embankment. And, you know, once again, you know, I see that as one of the reasons for our success, because if you look at the riverbank all the way now, from Lambeth all the way down to the Tower, especially on the south bank, it's just full of fantastic visitor attractions and things to do, places to go, and things to see. And you know, you can hop on and off of the Clipper and see two or three of those, you know, major attractions in one day.
Well, let me see if I can work this out then, because this is looking increasingly useful to me. I've got to get to the Royal Festival Hall, which we're just coming up for at the weekend. So I'm going to be coming from East London on that day. How am I going to do that?
Whereabouts in East London are you coming from?
Near the Olympic Park.
Near the Olympic Park. Okay, well, you can either take the DLR or Jubilee Line to Canary Wharf. A change for boat there to Waterloo. And then it's about a 3-minute walk.
I think I'm going to do that. And that's going to cost me what?
£4.50 with a travel card.
Right, it's a deal. I like the sound. Hey, you touched just very briefly on your own background on water and your family background on water. What's going on there?
Well, I'm the third generation in my family to work on the river. I currently have two cousins that work on the river in completely different fields. One of them's a tug captain for Corey Environmental. And
who I've sailed with, in fact.
Well, you may have sailed with him.
Who is he?
Wayne Collins.
I have.
There you go.
Fantastic.
And his brother is a passenger boat captain for one of the private tour companies.
And what about the previous generations you mentioned? What were they doing?
My father was a waterman, a lighterman, mainly a lighterman. So he used to do a bit like what Wayne does, tow barges up and down, all the way up to Brentford, in fact, from Tilbury in one tide. My uncle, Wayne's father, used to do the same thing. He was my dad's brother. And our grandfather was a lighterman as well, mainly in the docks, because the term lighterman way back was somebody that lighted a ship of its cargo before the days of containerisation, obviously. And, you know, that was the demise of the docks in central London, whilst it's very busy down in the estuary with Tilbury Dock and now Dubai Ports at Shellhaven. You know, there is more tonnage transshipped and moved down there now than what the entire docks did in their heyday. But, you know, the loose cargo very much changed from that day. But the lighterman used to put his barge alongside a ship, and then the ship would discharge cargo into that barge, and then the barge was then towed to another wharf, another destination further up through the bridges, or another dock come to that. So the term lighterman was a person that looked after a lighter, which was a barge that used to lighter the ship of its cargo and then take it on to its interport destination.
And the tense that you used told me that perhaps your grandfather isn't still around.
No, nor is my father, unfortunately.
Right. And, well, I wondered what they would... perhaps they had an opportunity to express it, but what they thought of the... or what they would think of the operation here on the Thames Clippers.
I think they'd be pretty pleased, pretty proud of it. It's... you know, I bet they'd much rather see barges going up and down full of cargo because it's what they used to do. But you know, here we are in a changing time, changing environment, and this is satisfying the needs for today and bringing a river back to life, and indeed creating an employment that you know has seen significant demise over the last 30, 40 years.
Do you think there is any realistic scope for the Thames ever returning to the sort of cargo-based industrial usage that it saw before to any degree?
Well, it will do for the Thames Tideway Tunnel. It's the only way that they can get rid of, you know, they can transport the large volumes of mud that has got to come out of that tunnel for it to be built. And equally, the materials that have got to go into the building of it will come in by river. So it will get a new lease of life in that respect. And equally, you know, London is becoming more and more anti-lorry movements in the centre. And as a result of that, they are going to have to look at ways in which, you know, large projects are supported in the movement of materials. Battersea Power Station, for instance, you know, a large proportion of materials undoubtedly is going to come in by river for that. And
from where do you get that sense of assurance?
Because the concept of moving it, the logistics of moving it any other way is so prohibitive and so, you know, a logistics nightmare, where the river is a simple solution, and it can bring it from source, it can bring it from you know, the docks and the ballast terminals further down the river in bulk right the way up. I mean, on our way up today we would have passed a barge being pushed by a tug carrying 1,000 ton of aggregate. You know, there is always going to be building, there is always going to be development, and the need for, don't get me wrong, I don't think that the transportation of wood in bulk that used to go up to Brentford Dock and then go up through the canal system, you're not going to get a return in to that degree. But loose cargo, I think it will continue to be transported by river. And I think that the Thames Tideway Tunnel will do is it will allow investment in modern barges, in modern tugs, to be able to do that more efficiently and even more compete with the road.
I want to press some buttons, but I don't know which buttons to press at the moment. I sort of want to ask about other things that you're aware of, maybe schemes that you've seen suggested for the river, but I don't know whether it's going to be too political to go down those kind of roads. But any ideas that you've seen proposed for London or for the river that strike you as ill-advised at best?
Well, specifically for the river, I can give you an example that I was very anti, but that was only from a navigational perspective, not from a concept, and that was the London River Park. It was a plan to have a great big floating walkway.
Oh, this was the giant eggs?
Yeah, and that was going to go all the way from Blackfriars down to Tower on the North Bank. Well, that was going to be in an area that was also already very restricted and had significant tidal effects caused by bridges and everything else, and that would have just added to the problem and further restricted navigation. So it was a great concept. I loved it, but it was probably the wrong place in the river that it was being suggested. I think there are other places on the river that could work. The bridge that's being proposed, the garden bridge, fantastic idea. And also in a great location. It's going to link an area of the river for pedestrians that will be heavily utilised, like the Millennium Footbridge. You know, the Millennium Footbridge was a fantastic introduction to linking the North Shore and the South Shore for pedestrians, and you know what a vision there was there, because you know you look at the volumes of people now that congregate around the Tate modern Shakespeare's Globe, that whole Bankside area is just heaving with people. And, you know, you walk across the bridge straight into the front door of St. Paul's Cathedral. It's you know, incidentally, that was the route that Thomas Doggett almost used to take every day back in the day when he was transported across by wherry. You know, it's evolution, and I think that the garden footbridge will once again raise the profile with the river.
Where would you like to see it positioned?
Where it's suggested, I think it's coming over from just above the Oxo Tower on the south bank there, over to the borderline of the City of London and the City of Westminster.
Well, I've pressed gently, but so far you remain universally positive, even towards the ideas that you don't quite approve of for various technical reasons. So I really need to ask, what annoys you about London? I'll consider my work not done if I don't puncture your positivity.
Repetition and bureaucracy.
Oh, good, right, OK. is this the sort of thing that we hear a lot about with the red tape around running businesses?
Yeah, and for us, you know, we have got... I'm absolutely for regulation. I think it's a good thing. I was only saying to someone earlier on today that as a result of regulation, that when you look at the developments, majority of developments that get planning approval, they've been well thought out, well positioned, and blend in with other architecture, historic architecture. So I see that as, and I'm talking about modern day, I'm not talking about a few years ago. There's a few buildings that was built a few years ago that didn't quite tick that box. I very much welcome change, but as an industry, we have to deal with the National Maritime Regulator, which is RIHE, which is the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency. And then locally, we have to deal with the Port of London Authority from a navigational perspective. And then the custodian of our licences are Transport for London. And at times, them three are very, very disjointed. And it's hard being caught in the crossfire, and one shoe doesn't fit all, and then to add to that, you've got all the different boroughs that link both sides of the river that have all got different approaches and different objectives. And don't get me wrong, I think there has been, we've got this thing called the Mayor's Concord, River Concord app. And it's been going a good few years now, and it's only really in the last couple of years that has really started to move on. And it's as a result of the River Action Plan and the Mayor's focus on delivering more capacity, seeing more freight and more passengers transported by water, that is beginning to bring these boroughs together and think a little bit more joined up. But there's still a long way to go. But I think that there is a mechanism there now to do that, because without it, it would be like banging your head against a brick wall.
Which must be a temptation sometimes, I'm sure, in all the bureaucracy. So you've had to acquire some or develop skills that already existed in sort of diplomacy and negotiation and being a little bit political and with a small p.
Yeah, some would say that I'm not. It's been a hard struggle, and you know, you have to bang the table at times to get where you want.
You've met Boris, I presume.
Yes, yep. Yep.
Yeah, how does he support the Clippers?
He very much supports river transport, and has been a great supporter of the Clippers, and so was Ken, to be fair. I think what has happened is that whilst the Mayor has supported rivers over the last few years, it's taken a while for Transport for London to support it. They are now firmly on board and are supporting it well. So I think it's, you know... I think in summary there, irrespective of whether Ken or Boris, they have both championed the river and brought it forward, and one would argue that, you know, that is a real positive for the actual introduction of the Mayor of London. I think the position Mayor of London has been very, very positive. I think it has added so much to the culture and to the development of London from a people perspective as well as a building perspective. And a long way may it continue, and let's hope long may we continue to have the great characters that we've had as mayor. And because, you know, the energy and the passion that you see is just phenomenal, and you know I see them as great figureheads, and Boris I think has done a fantastic job throughout his time as mayor, and undoubtedly will leave a fantastic legacy for the next one to pick up.
Well, I think that's very important what you say, that in all the argy-bargy about precisely who happens to be filling the office, the fact that we have a mayor really is a major plus point for London, and has been since the office was created.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's been created, the actual office alone, just, you know, just the vision of where the office is situated. It's just behind the gate to London. Tower Bridge, and as you come through Tower Bridge, you look to your right and you've got the Tower of London, which is a phenomenal building, and then you look to the left and you've got the Mayor's Office and More London, as we spoke about earlier on, Potter's Field, and it is just a fantastic entry into the pool of London, and that home has bred some great things into the future management of the city, or the capital.
Well, we're going to be passing by those landmarks fairly soon, but we're coming to the end of our show today. To our right we can see Gabriel's Wharf over there. I can make out the eye on the horizon, and we're just coming under...
This is Blackfriars Road Bridge, and then immediately after that is you've got Blackfriars Rail, which of course has just had a major makeover with a station now that spans from one side of the river to the other.
Well, that finishes on the note of positivity and modernity.
That incidentally wouldn't have been achieved without the materials coming in by river and all of the construction taking place by river.
Well said. Sean Collins, thanks for having us on board today. If people want to find out more about routes and times and all of that jazz as regards Thames Clippers, where can they do so?
They can do so on our website, which is thamesclippers.com, or follow us on Twitter.
Well, sure, Collins, thanks very much indeed.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
And that's all for this week. My thanks for this week to Sean Collins. Thanks too to Mark Barr and Bernie Barclay. Theme and incidental music was by Songs from the Howling Sea. I'm in Quentin Wolfe.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.